introduce the Q&A. I wanted to thank both Rabbi Raz and Rabbi Leibowitz for joining us for the Q&A and for all the time that you're in the gate throughout the summer. Rabbi Raz is a very, very busy man over the summer. He has plenty to take care of, but out of the goodness of his heart and his love for sharing Torah, he agreed to give a shiur every single week in this Q&A. We benefited tremendously from that, and that Rabbi Leibowitz obviously gave, I think it was 7 shiur a day, probably more on certain days, and Zoom and everything. And just on behalf of Masni, we wanted to express our gratitude and thank you so much for the Q&A and for all the shiur throughout the summer. Without further ado. So the first question, that's a bit of a lot of sub-questions to it, but the main question is, if someone is afraid to make Aliyah because he feels there is no strong YU community in Israel, and he doesn't want his family to go to one of the extremes, is that a valid reason why not to make Aliyah? And within that, just comparing and contrasting Batati Lomi versus Modern Orthodoxy, and that's the question.
First,
Rabbi Asner.
Again, first, it's always supposed to be able to do this with Rabbi Leibowitz. It's always good to learn from Rabbi Leibowitz. And during these, whenever I listen to his answers, I say, why didn't I say that? And that was a good answer. But it's really something, somebody that you had the chance to learn from this summer. And I've been learning from it. We've been learning together for many years, Baruch Hashem. And it's somebody that you've taken advantage with and keep taking advantage with. Those in YU Smicha, and thinking about YU Smicha. He's somebody to be close to, somebody who is shaping the world of American Jewry through his work in YU, in Reitz. And Baruch Hashem, he should continue to be Matzliach in all his ways. Again, when it comes to thinking about Aliyah, let's just frame the question first. Okay, just come in and talk about some details. First, you have to frame the question. Let's remember. First of all, there are a few givens. Given that there is a mitzvah of Yishev Eretz Yisrael, that's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us, it's the first conversation that Hashem had with Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, and Yeshua. The first conversation. The first thing he said to every one of them was, go to Eretz Yisrael. Let's talk about Eretz Yisrael. That's not a coincidence. That's telling us, as many point out, you don't need to look in Torah Shebaal Peh to know that it's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. Now, it's basically in almost every parasha. That is the place where HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us. Rav Asher Weiss likes to point out that, you know, much of the literature over the past 800 years is about the sheet of the Rambam. You know, why doesn't the Rambam count it as one of the 613? There are many rayas that from the Rambam that he does count it as a mitzvah d'oraisa against the Megillas Esther, that it is a full-fledged mitzvah. But Rav Asher Weiss compares it fascinatingly to the sheet of tefillah according to the Rambam. The Rambam doesn't count tefillah as a mitzvah. You think the Rambam would say you could be a complete full Jew without tefillah, never talking to Hashem? The Rabbanim were machadesh, there's this unbelievable new thing called tefillah. Of course there's a mitzvah of tefillah according to the Rambam. It's not counted as one of the 613. For whatever reason, there's no mafurish pasik, there's no mafurish sivui, whatever reason, but there's some things that just reading the Torah, you recognize. Each one of the Abbas and the Imos turned to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Obviously, tefillah is a basic tenet. Yishev Eretz Yisrael is a basic tenet. Tefillah for the Ramban is Yishev Eretz Yisrael for the Rambam. For some reason, he doesn't count it as one of the separate of the 613, but it is clear. Every Jew needs to yearn to be there. Again, this is all background before you start getting into details. Rabbi Yaakov Emden writes in Hakdama to the Beis Yaakov, his sitter, that we know there's a halacha in Maseches Brachos that we dive in towards Eretz Yisrael and we dive in towards Yerushalayim. Says Rabbi Yaakov Emden, that's the halacha b'dieved. If you can't be there, you can dive in towards Eretz Yisrael. Says Rabbi Yaakov Emden, if a person has the chance and the opportunity to not just dive in towards something, not just to have a memory of something, but to actually have it. To actually, you know, be in actuality. And all the, we know, throughout the ages, why did Vilna Gaon want to leave Vilna? He had everything there, didn't he? And why did the Chavos Chaim want to leave Radin? And why did Rabbi Yehuda Halevi want to leave? And he left. And why did the Ramban, the head, the Rosh, the Rosh Kabahag in the greatest sense of the word, not just the title. And he left. Why? Because every Jew was eager to be there. So, now let's get to the question. Having that given, and acknowledging what the community was like in the days of the Ramban, where you couldn't find a minyan in Yerushalayim, and he had to send up to the north to bring down a Sefer Torah. Are there challenges in every situation in life, in every community in life? There's for sure challenges. There are challenges everywhere. Are there personal situations in everybody's life? There are 100% personal situations. Should there be a total general, well, it's hard because of A, B, or C? One shouldn't take that on face value unless one does serious research with all their heart to want to be there and try to make it work. In one's mind, and try to be... You won't be able to figure dot every I and cross every T. Right after Rav Kook's famous line that they had to conquer Cheshbon before they went in there to Israel. To conquer Cheshbonos. You can't have everything worked out. But you can't go in blind, 100%. But is there serious looking into what's happening there? Somebody who's a friend of ours, were advised by their Rav in Muncie not to make Aliyah because you're going to mess up your kids. So they stayed in Muncie and their kids weren't doing so well. And they made Aliyah and Baruch Hashem, the kids settled down and got married and Baruch Hashem. So we need Siyata Deshmaya everywhere. There are challenges everywhere. One needs to find a community that one is comfortable with. That's for sure. The more like-minded people, like the question that you're talking about, let's say strong YU, if you want to call it, that most of the people in this room find themselves in, the more people in there, then the greater it'll be, the greater hashpa, and the more that it's happened over the past 20, 30, 40 years, certain influences have changed. Every community needs chizuk, that's for sure, 100%. You know, let's say you're asking about the dati, I'm not getting into the labels, but the dati lumi, tzioni, world, there are tremendous kochos of Torah, but there definitely needs to be strong avas haTorah and kiyasita haTorah strengthened in our community, and I'm part of that community. And there are other communities, maybe more to the right, that need to strengthen themselves in more avas haTorah. And avas ben adam l'chaveiro. And every community can learn from each other. There is no perfect community, there's no perfect situation. There needs to be a deep feeling of a chrayus. I say that every year, but I'll say it again because I feel it's so true. It's something that I don't have. Children growing up in certain communities in Eretz Yisrael have a feeling of a chrayus for the Am and for the lands that I didn't have growing up in America. This feeling of having to do something for Am Yisrael. In general, my wife likes to point out, when one grows up in Chutz La'aretz, we do chesed and we learn Torah, but there's... It's not that there's anything wrong, but there's an aspect that's lacking. And you don't feel it until you live there. You don't feel that you're one family. And when Rechman al-Aslan at Sara happens, it's not just like, okay, let's say Tehillim and Shul. You feel it. It's like it's your family. And my kids who can't understand how somebody won't want to serve in some way, doesn't mean in the army. Yeah, but to serve in the army, my boys. But to serve in a hospital. To serve in just to feel the achrayus for the Am, that's something that we haven't had the chance to have for 2,000 years, and it's something that's it's something special about certain communities in Eretz Yisrael. To make a blanket statement that there's not enough of this, there are challenges 100%. One should never, I think there's another question later on I saw, one should never let the school or the community educate. Parents always have to have a strong hashpa as well. But again, the more people, the more like-minded people that come, look around, there are many people like you and me that are there, various towns and cities that I'm not going to mention, but each one has their own niche. No two are the same. Just to think of major Anglo communities, you have where I am in Beit Shemesh, you have Efrat, you have Renana, you have Modi'in, and they're all different. And they all serve different, populations. And we need them. But... it's never been easier to make Aliyah in the history of the past 2,000 years. There's never been a good organization that throws money at you. and helps you find jobs and goes through the whole process with you. There's never been, that doesn't mean there's no challenges. That doesn't mean I remember, you know, my first panic attack that I've ever had was like the day after my lift left. And, you know, like, and you just wanted to be like, okay, what can it be just 4 months later? And like, you could be like, you know, settled. And so there are anxieties, but that's anywhere moving. But to have a blanket statement that I'm not going to even look into it, again, there are concerns. But one has to seriously look into it, and then if somebody seriously looks into it, and after, you know, pushing and trying, given everything that we've said, one says that temporarily, right now, this is the best decision for my family, okay. And I, my wife and I spoke about this, probably met Elia also. We don't judge anybody. Everybody makes their own decisions, and, you know, everybody does what's right for their family, and... You know, and I don't tell everybody I have to make Aliyah tomorrow. Well, sometimes some people say I should be more extreme. I don't tell everybody every Talmud that says, should I stay here or should I go back to YU? I don't tell everybody to stay. I don't tell everybody, every family, I get calls and emails. Every case you have to look into, but everybody has to do a serious chesed nefesh to try to figure out, you know, how I can. If the answer is temporarily I can't right now because dot, 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 then, you know, that's okay. But just to have a blanket statement that there are no schools for my kids, and there's no this, there's no that. There's definitely certain things that Israeli schools could learn from American schools. That's true. But not to have the blanket statement to not even look into it. I think that's what many people take it as an excuse, just to not look into it. Well, there's not enough people like me. So that's why you have to, you know, take the first part of the givens and then try. And then if it doesn't work at this moment, you know, then it won't work. I think I answered some parts of the questions. I think my other answers will be shorter. But anyway, so
I should answer the same. Okay, what?
Something to add.
If there's anything to add, there's not much to add. Normally, I would start off by telling you all about how great Rabbi Rosner is and what a special opportunity is. It has been to learn from him, and it continues to be to learn from him. But I think, like, this sort of speaks for itself. Rabbi Rosner is always so extremely well-prepared, but in the amount of preparation that he puts in, most of us, if we put in that amount of preparation, still wouldn't yield the same result. We wouldn't yield the organization, the clarity, and the breadth of Mar Makomos and application of those Mar Makomos. And you may have noticed, like when Rabbi Rosner talks Hashkafa, I was looking at some of his stuff that he's going to be producing Be'ez Hashem very soon, it should be Bekarov. When he talks about everything's with Mar Makomos and everything's so well thought out, and like you've seen with me with Archa Sadiqim, it's whatever flies off the cuff, you know, whatever story I want to tell you. That difference in preparation is years in the making, you know, that to have that gap, you know, that continues to get bigger and bigger. Sadly, but as far as the question is concerned, I was very taken by the phrasing of the question, not to make Aliyah because there's no YU community in Israel. If I did have time today to prepare, I would have opened up a Sefer Mitzvahs again and looked for the mitzvah to go to YU. I don't think there's such a mitzvah in the Torah. I don't think there's a mitzvah in the Torah that your children have to be YU people. Granted, we feel strongly about our brand of Judaism, and we want to be able to pass it on to our children as much as we can. But, you know, I have news for you. If you think that your children are going to be exactly like you, think about yourself and your parents. Are you exactly like your parents? Now, granted, I'm sure Rabbi Rosner, of course, could speak to this whole topic and has spoken to this whole topic much, much better than I can. There is a higher likelihood that your children will develop a different set of values when they grew up in an entirely different world than the world that you grew up in. And Rabbi Rosner alluded to that with the sense of achrayus. I'm sure there are many other differences also. Our job is to pass on a Masorah of Torah Judaism. Our job is not for YU to conquer the world. You know, I love YU. They feed my children. YU is the best. But if YU was the only yeshiva in the world, that wouldn't be good for Judaism. If Panovich was the only yeshiva in the world, that also wouldn't be good for Judaism. If any single place was the only place... So I don't think there's any such mitzvah. Your kids aren't going to be like you anyway. The Shaila is, can you raise children to be Ovdei Hashem in Eretz Yisrael? And, I mean, the answer is I think, pretty self-evident. And even like if you're afraid it's going to ruin your relationship, you know, with your kids, because they're going to be growing up in a different... If there's respect, it's not going to ruin any relationship. If there's love, if there's respect, it doesn't ruin relationships. I think about the person I probably admire, you know, most in the world, you know, or close to it, is my grandfather, Shlita. The way he grew up is nothing close to the way I grew up. You know, he, the whole world when he was growing up was black and white. I saw the pictures. There was all these little children had caps and whatever. It was a totally different. In Czechoslovakia, it was a totally different world. We connect beautifully because I so admire him, because he's my hero. So we connect beautifully. I don't think that should be. There are cheshbonos, as Rabbi Razin referred to. I don't think that should be the cheshbon.
Do any of the rabbanim have any regrets in life?
Should I go first on this one? Yeah, this is an easy and a short answer for me. I do have one major regret in life, is that I did not spend very much time at all in full-time learning. And I, as the years have gone on, I see what a difference it could have made for me had I spent more time in full-time learning. I went into teaching at a very, very young age, and that was good for me, and I'm very grateful to Rabbi Kamenetsky for offering that to me. Had it not been for that, I wouldn't have been in Klei Kodesh at all. I was primed to go to law school, and I don't know if I would have been a good lawyer or bad lawyer otherwise, but I'm pretty happy with with what I do right now. So, so I'm very grateful that actually happened. But I wish I had the wisdom to know that this was the right path for me, and then prepared better for it by actually learning a lot of Torah. That's why I talk to Talmidim all the time. It's one of my goals in YU is to encourage Talmidim. I'm already working toward this and coming. It always bothered me that it's like the only yeshiva that like as soon as you graduate college, you're either gonna be studying your Yoredeya or you go into the workforce. Like, what if you don't want to learn Yoredeya and you just want to learn? What if you want to learn a few more years by Rav Schachter or Rosenzweig, and then you want to go to law school? And like, you're not going to be a rabbi and you don't need to learn for smicha. So can't you just stay and learn? Isn't that a value? Isn't Talmud Torah, like a yeshiva normally works, isn't that a value also? And not just a value, it's a prime value. I think we need a more educated, we should all be learning more years full time than I learned. Even the people who don't go into Klei Kodesh. So that's by far, that's what keeps me up at night. That's by far the biggest regret.
Klai Yisrael benefited by the regret that Charlie was had, so I could say that we sleep better at night. got into the workforce a little bit earlier. It's a hard question, and again, just the assumption of the question, when you get the question of any regret, sounds like we're like old and looking back. I like to think of ourselves as still young and still forward looking, and even though every day is a step older, but just the note of the question. I can ask my rebbeim, that kind of question looking back. Number one. But I just heard recently, I was running this week, I heard Rabbi Ari Berman, President Berman, spoke to last week, wherever it was, I think in the United States, he had an amazing thought, which I think relates to this question. And that is on the same daf in Gittin, that daf that you come on Tisha B'Av, one of the two daf in there. So on the top, you have the story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, and the Gemara emphasizes not just that the idea that the Baal HaBayis didn't let him pay for half the party, the whole party, threw him out, the Rabbanan was there and didn't say anything. The Rabbanan didn't say anything. They didn't stand up. Why didn't they stand up? Why didn't they say anything? They probably knew it was wrong. But sometimes it's hard to stand up, and maybe he was a big donor. There was a risk to stand up. And then what happened a couple of lines later? He comes to the Beis HaMikdash with the Balmum, Zechariah ben Avkulis. What are we going to do? They're going to say Balmum is going to be Chayav Misa, bring a Balmum, Chayav Misa, and the Rabbanim there were silent also. In the face of Zechariah ben Avkulis. But he's a Rodei, if you're going to destroy, lead to the Beit. Nothing. and contrast that to the bottom of the Amud, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who goes out, pretends to be dead, and Vespasian, he goes out, finally, Vespasian, if I was king, where have you been? And he calls him the king, gives him the three wishes, Tein li yada v'chachaman. The next line, some of the other Tanaim says, I don't think he was right. I think, should have asked for the Beis HaMikdash. Imagine being in that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai situation. What do you do? Do you ask for it? Do you not ask for it? You're risking that. And Rav Soloveitchik has the amazing comment that's written in a few of his Sfarim, that maybe this is the Pshat of the Gemara Brachos Chavches. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai in his deathbed tells us Talmidim, in front of me I see two paths, Gan Eden and Gehenim. What do you mean Gehenim? How do you see Gehenim? It's Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Because until his dying day, he was bothered by this. Did I make the right decision? I took a risk. I did something. But it gnawed at him, but he went forward and became the greatest, one of the greatest transmitters of Torah. He went forward. Did he have a regret? I don't think we call it a regret. We make decisions in life. Hakadosh Baruch Hu wants us to go forward with that decision and stand up. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai went out. He made it. He went out. He risked his life. He stood up and he made it. He didn't say, I don't know, just whatever you want. He made the decision. And then he went forward with it. And he lived his life, even though there's always... So every decision in life, whatever we choose to do, whatever profession we choose to go into, you know, there's always... We're not Nevi'im. And nobody's telling us. And we generally don't believe to go to a Mekubal to get an answer. Do this, do that. No, but Baruch Hu wants us to make decisions. And, you know, regret? I can say things that I miss. I miss, people said, you miss anything after making Aliyah. I miss walking in the halls with my Rebbeim. When I was on NYU campus for 20 years. You know, that to walk in the halls with, you know, Baruch Hashem, I've been involved in great institutions since then. I miss, but that's why I had to give up. So it's a hard, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to move forward. And are there many different paths that we could have taken? I don't know. You just got to figure out the one that one took and go forward and be like Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. You know, not let doubt paralyze us, move forward and do the best with the decision and build on it and keep going, keep going forward in our life.
How can we ask for things in tefillah if Hashem knows what is good for us and we don't know if what we're asking for is something that is actually good for us, even if because we may want it?
Question for that. Okay. So again, how could we ask for things in tefillah
if we don't actually know what's best for us and Hashem knows what's best for us?
Right.
And So
first of all, so much of tefillah is not just about asking for things. The most basic idea of tefillah is connection. Just having the conversation. You know, whether it's even Shevach, Bakashah, I mean, Bakashah is part of it. But number one, it's the connection that defines tefillah. That is, as we know, that's the verdict of Meir Pamishlaner, that the Nachash. Many of you have heard that. Everybody gets a punishment during Maaseh Bereishis. Adam gets a punishment, B'zeis Hafechato Halechem, and Chava gets a punishment, Isha gets a punishment, pain in childbirth, and the Nachash gets a punishment. What's the punishment? Afer Tocha Kol Yimei Chayecha. And the Medrash said he lost his legs. But Afer Tocha, that's the Remeir Pamishlaner. Why is that such an onesh? He always has what he needs. He always has what he needs. He's hungry, takes a bite of the dirt. Might not taste so good, but he always has what he needs. So he said that's the biggest onesh in the world. Kodesh Baruch Hu says, take your dirt and leave me alone for eternity. I don't want to have a relationship with you. The fact that we are able to turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the greatest gift in the world. It's the greatest, because we can connect. That's the basic idea of tefillah. Or Pincus writes, he put tefillah on the map, so to speak. One of the ones who put it in our generation. Or Pincus writes, he gives a mashal, I think it's based on a Malbim in Tehillim. Is a mashal that let's say somebody is ill and they go to this professional doctor and for months and months they're working with the doctor and finally Baruch Hashem the refuah comes. So he says, what did you get out of that experience in the past year? Number one, you got refuah, but also they have a relationship with the doctor, who they value, who they respect, who they trust, and that's a, that in a certain sense, is a very different, maybe even deeper benefit that they had from the whole experience, just the relationship itself. So first, even before we get to the asking by tefillah, they're just the communication itself. We discussed, I think, in two of the shiur that we had about Rav Soloveitchik, that nevuah and tefillah is a hemshef to that. So number one is tefillah is important even without, well, not for the asking. Number two, the question relates a little bit to the question of the Rishonim about how tefillah works. And that is, if we're supposed to get it, so why do we have to daven? And if we're not supposed to get it, how does tefillah help? Does tefillah change God? Right now we're changing up. We say, pretty please, pretty please. So you might say, yes, that works. Right? Rav Pinkus says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world with these pipelines of Shefa that they're supposed to come down to us, but they're blocked. And the way we open them, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to say the magic words. Wants to say the magic words to open, like the grass didn't grow until Adam had a daven for rain. So yes, it could be, but other Rishonim say, the Sefer Ikarim writes, that no, tefillah doesn't change Hashem, it changes us. And before I davened, I was Rosner A. But after I davened, I'm Rosner B. And Rosner B has a different package from HaKadosh Baruch Hu than Rosner A. So that's ultimately what tefillah is supposed to do. It's supposed to change who we are. But we also add the last word, Berachem. Rav Schechter has, I think, in the Pidini Rav, he quotes from the Rav. The Rav said, you don't know how hard I davened not to have to leave Europe during World War II. How hard I davened, and Baruch Hashem, Hashem didn't listen to my tefillah. It says, that's what we say, but Kabel Barachamim uvarasun as tefillah seyid. Accept Barachamim. If it's not Barachamim, don't accept my tefillah. We put in that security in our tefillah. The Kabel Barachamim. But we also try to raise ourselves up so we're worthy of special bracha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you're right, we never know, you know, what's good for us, but you know, we could have a good idea, and we daven HaKadosh Baruch Hu Barachamim. That's our security. That's why on Rosh Hashanah we don't take any chances. We have this tefillah without words. You know, we just don't say a word. Hashem, you fill in the blank. You fill in the blank. So, you know, we try to cover our bases with words. You know, there are certain things that we, you know, we think is shalom and bracha and or and briut. But this is the system HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up, and we try to tap into it as well as we can.
Everything he said is yisod gadol, chazerit. Particularly what resonates with me is that first point. Tefillah is not Amazon Prime. You know, two-day delivery, what's going on? It's been 2.5 days already. How come it's not here yet? It's not, you know, it's the way we're used to living our lives. Like, I want something, I demand it, I get it. That's not what tefillah is. Dveikus b'Hashem. It's our role on this earth is to connect to the Ribbono Shel'olam, to be marbe kvod shemayim in the world. That's it. That's what we're here for. We mentioned in the Aruch HaTzaddikim shir earlier that it's a shtickle of avodah zarah to think that we can use Hashem to our benefit rather than to be here to serve Hashem. I mean, that was the concept of avodah zarah, is that there's the power of this and the power of that, and I need this and I need that, so I'll take that power and use it for the things I need. That's not tefillah. Tefillah is to be mistabik to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To the particular of the question, just one more point, and that is that we probably would benefit if we weren't so particular all the time in our tefillahs. To be a little more broad in what we're asking, meaning to a certain extent, enachinami. Don't ask for such specific things. I can recall on several occasions where we asked Rav Schechter about certain things relating to tefillah, and he said, no, you're asking too specific, broaden it. You know, I remember there was one case of a couple that the woman was pregnant and they went for genetic testing. They had done some genetic testing earlier, they went for further genetic testing, and it turned out that they were both carriers of a pretty horrific disease. And she was already pregnant. So they wanted to know, till the test came back on the fetus, are they allowed to daven that the fetus doesn't have that disease? It's a 1 in 4 chance that he does, right? But can they daven for that, or is that a tefillah shav? So Rav Schechter said, the tefillah should be, gam ki eilich begeitz al maves lo irara ki ato yimadi. That no matter where I'm going, no matter what situation I'm about to be in, I should have the strength to withstand it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I should have the knowledge HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with me. And another case recently where someone asked Moray and Rav Shechter, if they could daven, they were worried about the ruchnius of a particular relative of theirs, so they wanted to daven that something should befall that relative, so a certain opportunity that might ruin their ruchnius should no longer be available to that relative. And he says, don't daven that anything in particular should befall the relative. Daven that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give opportunities for growth in Ruchnius so that he could take advantage of them. You daven broadly. Daven broadly and daven mostly just to connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam.
Should we feel personally responsible when tragedy befalls Klal Yisrael because of sins we have done, based on the Rambam and Hilchos Teshuva?
Says in my first? I would just say that I think when we talk about the world being 50-50 and you know, one Aveira could you know, change the whole scales, and one mitzvah, that's the Rambam that's being referred to, is I think that is more prospective than retrospective. Meaning, I think before you act, think, this action is a very chashuva action. That we don't appreciate the value of our mitzvos and our averos and what their poel and what kind of effect they have on us and they have on the world and they have on our families and they have a, we can't possibly appreciate the full value of them. But retrospectively, to look back and think, it must have been my avera that did that. You know, that you go very, you cross over a line over there in terms of going from productive achrayus to very unproductive guilt. And those are very, very different things from each other. If a person is just feeling a sense of guilt and feels that things are their fault, you know, then it's not going to lead to a sense of productivity. It's not going to lead to be marbe kvod shemayim in the world. It's not going to lead to inspire more avodas Hashem. So I don't think that's the right way to deal with tragedy.
We don't have Nevi'im today. We haven't had Nevi'im for a very long time. And it's reckless to say this tragedy happened because of this. And sometimes, you know, one hears that. After Rahmanul Islan, something happens. I find it hurtful, and I just don't understand when certain Rabbanim get up and say, well, this is the Aveira it's because of. And it generally has to do with women's sneeze, which... Okay, so you have to blame them. You know, it's terrible. Everybody has what to work on. There aren't enough things that, again, I'm not talking about any specific rabbi or any specific case or any specific tragedy. But it's something that I've seen over the past 30, 40 years. You know, that this is often coming out of certain places. You know, it's always the same thing. And, you know, as Rabbi Lipwood said, it is not productive. And if you want to pick something, how about Senasmina? And if you want to pick something, how about, you know, something that relates to every single Jew that we could do better on? But again, to label a specific chait as being the cause of something, even Rahman al-Aslan, you hear it, I mean, even, you know, Ada Yom Hazeh, in the news. Well, you know, this government or that government is not going to be because this Avera is being done. Even that kind of thing. It's just we are not Nevi'im. What we have to do, the Rambam says in Hilchos Tainis, every single tragedy that happens is to wake us up, so we can each think about what we can do better in. And if there's a rabbinic leader that thinks that there's something the community can do better in, you know, that applies to everyone, that doesn't, like Rabbi Leibowitz said, that doesn't make anybody feel guilty or feel bad. And but feel that I could do this, and I could focus on this, and I could be more patient, and I could be kovei itim, and I could, if it's tznius, it's tznius for men and for women, and tznius doesn't only have to do with how you dress, with how you talk and what you watch, and there's so many larger issues. To pinpoint one is I don't think is helpful. I know personally of people who went through a personal tragedy, and they were told by certain rabbinic figures, well, this is what you did wrong. And it was terrible. It's terrible. You know, it's maka gami maka. And, you know, that's not something that that we could do. We should just make kabbalas. We could again, what could I learn from this? How could I better my life to be able to bring more zchuyos to Klal Yisrael? That generally has to be our attitude. But not to say, you know, nevuah backwards or forwards, I might just add. You know, saying certain things will or won't happen also is not, you know, helpful. Again, it's not exactly the same question, but it just relates to the same, you know, chachamim yizaru b'divreichem. Again, there's, I don't know how old you guys were, born yet, by Gush Katif. There were certain rabbanim that said, don't worry, it's never going to happen. Don't worry, it's never going to happen. It's never going to happen, it's never going to happen. And there were certain teenagers that lost it, because these were their leaders, rabbinic figures, d'muyot, that they looked up to, and guess what? It happened. And it was very painful. And it was difficult. So a person can never say, this will happen, this won't happen, in our day. We daven for the day that there'll be Nevi'im, and, you know, we could go to the Urim V'Tumim and figure out which sin we have to work on. You know, that's fine. But until then, we just have to do our best not to blame others, to try to find, you know, national programs that we could do to energize, to encourage, to move forward, and to, you know, figure out how to bring the community up, instead of pinpointing and, you know, labeling certain sins that were taking place, more mitzvos or zechiras that we could do in the future.
Maybe it's the sin of the gaiva of the rabbanim that causes all the stress.
Yeah.
Why is saying that Eretz Yisrael is rishis tzmichas gilaseinu not assuming too much about our ability to understand Hashem's plan, or? Is it too much to say that?
Okay, Rabbi Rossman didn't want to take this one. I'm going to take this one first.
I stopped.
You take it?
Okay.
You go first?
No.
It's fine. It's fine. Okay. Rachel Smith has a little say about that question.
Okay. It's a great time.
But there's those listening online, is the last night of camp, we're having fireworks. I didn't know they were so happy to finish camp. What's sad is that people get so caught up in the detail and politics, and they lose sight of the larger issue. Obviously, this has to do with the first piece, but it causes such machlokas and shuls. You know, with the label, oh, if you say it, you're a, you know, I'm not a tzion. Moshe Rabbeinu was a tzion. I'm not. My former rebbeim will think I'm not from. Whether one says something or not, you know, it brings out, again, because it's an emotional, you know, statement that people grew up in certain shuls, and it's connected with such labeling. For whatever reason, it was instituted by certain people also that weren't connected to the Torah. But, you know, that's people lose sight of the larger issue of the gift of Eretz Yisrael and the gift of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done over the past couple hundred years. Per se, the language. First of all, think about the words. It's the beginning of the growth of the. It's like, what is it? That's not saying it's the Gula. It's the beginning of the beginning of the beginning of. It's like a few stages, beginning of a process. How do I know? So Rav Shechter likes to quote the Ramban that there's not a third korban, there's two tochachas, and each tochacha is one korban, and it's not going to be another korban. But also, we can just think about what's happened, and we know from the Arizal already. The Arizal already talks about one of the first communities you know, that developed was the Sfat, right? And the. It's amazing. And the Vilna Gaon. But just to think about what's happened over the past couple hundred years regarding Kibbutz Galias, regarding Jews coming back to Eretz Yisrael. Are you close to me? Just the numbers-wise, it's just fascinating to think about. How many Jews were in Eretz Yisrael in the 1850s? Right? When the real Aliyah started, 6,000. How many in 1948? Right? 60, how many a couple 50 years later? 60,000. How many in 1948? 600,000. How many now? 6 million. So it's just, something's happening. You know, we see Kibbutz Galus in front of our eyes. We see the lands, you know, connecting back, the Gemara Masechah Sanhedrin, that the land is going to wait for us to come back, and the Arabs for 1,000 years couldn't figure out how to grow a flower and grow a tree. And we come back and look at the growth. Do we,
we're not Nevi'im. I just said we're not Nevi'im. How could you say Reis? I'm not saying it's the Gula Shleima, but it's the beginning of a process that we see in front of our eyes of hundreds of years of Jews coming back and prophecies fulfilled. Do we know exactly what prophecy? Which, but it's, and miracles taking place and this Ramban. So again, this is something that we have to also not be blind and recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing tremendous and giving us tremendous gifts, and not to be mak and not to be a kfui tova. Again, if one has an emotional connection, I'm not saying everybody should say this, but you know what, to say that this is, you know, how could you say such a thing? And what about the tefillah for the chayalim? So that doesn't have to be a kasgula seinu. I think I'm not a navi either. If every single minion in the entire world would say that tefillah, not tefillah for the chayalim, one Shabbos Mashiach will come, and that's what's davening for fellow Jews. No, we can't say it. It's sad. There are fellow Jews that are being moser nefesh, that deserve our tefillos. So again, I think this, the question often is taken out of, it's taken blown up in proportions, again, based on, I think, upbringing that certain people have and political views that are connected to this. But 95% of Jews today think that the state of Israel brings something positive to the world. And if one believes in that, and to see what's been going on over the past 150 years, we have to have tremendous Hakaras HaTov for HaKadosh Baruch Hu and express it in some way. Express it in some way. Again, there's more to say, but...
I agree very, very strongly that we get too caught up in details. And this is the bigger picture of what's happening in Eretz Yisrael and what we're zocha to see in our lifetimes is so much more important. And people make a mountain out of a molehill, you know. It's like, oh, because that shul says Reish Mikl Skul Seinu, I'm never going in there. Or because I disagree with the rabbi saying Reish Mikl Skul Seinu, I don't care about Yerushalayim Yircha anymore. You know, like, I don't know, people just like say crazy things because they get caught up in such stupidity. I would even go further than Rabbi Razer said in terms of, if instead of if every shul said the tefillah for the chayalim, if every person in every shul in the regular tefillos had in mind that they're davening for the chayalim who are protecting Am Yisrael, maybe that would help bring Mashiach. Just to make that something at the center of our consciousness, something that we're grateful for, something to think about, the holiness of the kinds of people, you know. I don't know how heavy to get right now, but the a lot of you guys saw this year. There's a certain quality of aspiration, of unfulfilled potential, but already recognition of great potential to people around your age. And I heard Rav Lapiansky Shlita speaking. He said he got a copy of Mesilas Yesharim that was put out by a 19-year-old kid who took notes on his Rebbe's Shurim on Mesilas Yesharim. And the 19-year-old kid wrote up what his Rebbe said, and then he wrote his own personal avodas, like what he needs to incorporate into his own life. And Rav Lapiansky started reading some passages from this Mesilas Yesharim, and it's like, it's a picture of like a soaring neshama, of someone who's like ready to take off in life, of someone who's ready to be. And Rav Lapiansky said, and who wrote this? Who's the author? Not someone from the Panovich Yeshiva, not someone from the Mir Yeshiva, not someone from Yeshiva Hesder. Someone from, I forgot what it's called, in Israel they have a program, you can go for a year before you join the army, Mechina program, right, he was in such a program, and he was learning Mesilas Yesharim, and he was taking notes. And Rav Lapiansky said, and just a few years later, this young person, during a ceasefire in Gaza, was killed, and his parents are still fighting for his body to be returned. His name is Hadar Golden. And he said, you contemplate, and by the way, I don't know how many of you listen to Rav Lapiansky's shiurim. He's Lemaisa, he's a Haredi, right? Meaning, Lemaisa, he's a brother-in-law of the Mir Rosh Yeshiva. Lemaisa, you know, and he's a very cerebral person. I listen to a lot of his shiurim, very intellectual. He's like the opposite of Rav Shechter in that sense. And obviously, Rav Shechter is very smart, but like in terms of like Rav Shechter will cry about everything, gets emotional about everything. You never hear Rav Lapiansky analyzes everything. Everything's in analysis. He couldn't talk anymore when he said when he was talking about Hadar Golden. He couldn't talk. He couldn't get out the words anymore, because there's something about people of that age, and of your age, and the potential. And the sky is the limit, but you're starting to see where, you know, just where it can go. That's so precious, and that's so wonderful. And to think that parents send children of that age, just at that point in time where they're becoming a person and where their personalities are developed and they're starting to have aspirations and dreams, and parents send those children, and the children go themselves to fight for Am Yisrael. It's kedai that we should daven. Right? It's kedai that we should daven. It's rare that someone leaves behind a manuscript like that, and we know of others who left behind a written record of what their aspirations and what their plans are on a sheet of paper. And just how powerful that is to hold such a sheet of paper in your hand, and to know like what. You know, to contemplate who that came from and where they could have gone. It's something we should daven for. Getting to the actual detail that no longer really matters. You know, to say the words Reishis Micha Skul Haseinu, not to say the words Reishis Micha Skul Haseinu, it's something that reasonable minds can disagree about. Bekitzer, Rav Shechter's Yisod is, not Rav Shechter's Yisod, the Gemara's Yisod in the Sech Sanhedrin is that Geula is a three-step process. That there's going to be a Jewish government, and then it's Lahamel HaMelech, Lahachrizar Shal HaMelech, and Liv Nislam Beis HaBechira. Geula is defined by Liv Nislam Beis HaBechira, by building Beis HaMikdash, and the three mitzvahs in the Stav Yisrael have to go Kaseder Azeh. First, Lamed Melech to establish a Jewish government, then Lahachrizar Shalom Melech, and then Livnos Lam Beis Bechira. So, Shechter's Pashat argument is Reishis Micha Skul Haseinu means that process has begun. So, Lamed Melech has begun because we have a Jewish government. Aye, but how Jewish are they? Aye, they're Chavrei Knesset that are this and that and the other thing. I read a little Navi. There are Jewish kings that did much, much worse, even if you disagree politically with that, much, much worse. That the Jewish kings did. It's still Lamed Lamel, it's the beginning of a process. Again, reasonable minds can disagree about that, but the main point is what Rabbi Razer said, not to get caught up in the Kleina kind of things.
Can each of you tell us something that that you learned directly from your rabbi? Like, being a mido or something, learning about...
Should I go first? Or? You're probably more prepared than me.
Again, basically everything I know and have is from my Rebbeim. So really, but the answer is, all the Torah and all of the ways. But just you ask for specific, just try to zero in or one or two. Moi Barabi of Rosenzweig, I was in Yeshiva for a number of years. So he really teaches his Talmidim how to think, the types of questions to ask, how to appreciate every stage, every nuance, every change of language. I remember one day in Shir, he did a line and he said, I mean, one of my first years in the Shir, this line belongs in Maseches Krisos. It's like a Maseches Krisos line. I remember looking at him like, what in the world is he talking about? Maseches Krisos line. And then... you learn Maseches Krisos, which is the first Masechta that Rav Leibowitz and I were able to learn together. It's a very graphic Masechta. Every Masechta has its own character. Like, the Lumdis is like in the words of the Masechta. Hufim Mechlachet, Jemus Mechlachet. There's a lot there, but the idea that language plays such a role in Gemara, in Rishonim, that is something that one point, along with anybody who's been near him, impeccable midos, respect for everyone, for other rabbanim, for talmidim. When we would say something in shir that was totally wrong, he would say is exactly what the Rashba says, and he would like reconstruct our words, and balance. Because whenever one talks to imbalance in life, balance in aspects of learning, balance in all aspects of Avodas Hashem, is something that that I learn tremendous amounts from him, not just from what he says, but by what he does. Rav Schachter, I was never in Rav Schachter Shir, but I've listened to many hours when I lived in Brooklyn and the five towns going to YU each day, 2 hours in the car or on the train. For 2 years, I had the schus of driving his father, Rav Melech Schachter, to run a lebracha to and from YU when he gave his Yardaya Shir. So I remember one time he told me, he says, "You think my son remembers everything? You read the newspaper, he won't remember it in 2 hours from now. He remembers what he loves. You don't forget the names of your children. He just loves every single thing that he reads." So that, I mean, that made a big impression. I'm like, okay, I got to love one. Because you love and you see it, that you just, that video that people were showing last week, you just can't stay away. You can't stay away from something that you love. And so it's many midos that we can learn. Just one other point. I think, again, Rav Asher Weiss is really a Rebbe to many. I was never in his shir, never learned by him, but again, I think many of us, both of us here, have learned much from him over the past number of years. He also teaches much by example. Loving all Jews, giving Torah to all Jews, recognizing the value of each type of Jew, and he says that explicitly, right? That you can't be a complete Jew unless you have the commitment to Torah of this person, and the Shrizas and Mitzvahs of this person, and the Ahava Betzisol of this person, and the Simcha and Mitzvahs of this person. And he lives that way. But I think one other aspect that makes him unique that I think we could all learn from is his humanness as a posek. As a posek hador, someone who really understands and tries to understand the human element involved in every situation. And remember he once... I asked him a difficult shiloh about a reduction in a pregnancy. And he said, "Why does everybody ask me these shilohs?" I said, "Rebbe, because you're the one that people are comfortable with. And they know that nobody else is going to really understand them." And it's just the human side, somebody who's so, knows so much and is so great, but somebody who comes down, not Lahavdil, not Lahavdil, but Lahavdil, not Kashbarach, who is all the way up there, but he's shochein b'shmei marom, but he also comes down to be with all of us. He's someone who's down in the thick of life, such a command of Torah and such a command of life, and that's something that I find amazing in his ability to paskin in various situations. And whenever you hear the psak, you're like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, both in Torah and in psak, and in life. So it's something that we can learn a lot from every Rebbe that we have. About his source of having unbelievable Rebbeim, and I continue to learn from them.
I also had the schus of having tremendous, tremendous Rebbeim. Just to talk about Morena Rav Schachter Shlita a little bit. One mida that I think just jumps out at everybody who encounters him, like they expect, you heard Rav Schachter, they're like, it's almost, the anivus is almost shocking. It's hard to even fathom. Like, there's no, gravitas. There's no, it's just I happen to be here, right now. So, it's there's a difference between people who don't chase kavod and people who don't even know what kavod is. You get the sense that he's in that latter group. Like, he wouldn't even, he doesn't know what to do with it. It's not something that's at all of interest to him. And, b'makom gadluso, shamata motzei v'snuso. When you contrast that with the godless of what he is, it's stunning. And ashreinu that we're able to see such a thing. Obviously, the reason he's become a Rebbe to so many is because in learning, meaning you can have all the midos in the world, but in learning, you got to be great. And I think the hallmark or one of the main points of his learning is the ability to develop klalim that can be applied broadly throughout Shas and Poskim, and to be to develop klalim that work, klalim that are glut, that you'd have enough confidence in the lumdus of a klal that you developed through your learning, that you'd paskin a pikuach nefesh shaylo with that klal, like he does, meaning to have such confidence in your lumdus because you know that it's a klal that fits in to kol haTorah kula, not so much in the focus on the prate pratim, but the pratim will all fit in to some sort of bigger picture klal. Rav Asher Weiss is a lot like that also. In that sense, and that's why a lot of the Talmidim of one are attracted to the other, even though there are significant differences in their styles of Torah and their styles of presentation. But you know that they certainly do share. Another thing that they share is a sense of achrayus. Rav Shechter has a tremendous, tremendous sense of achrayus to Klal Yisrael, to the yeshiva. He's the only Rebbe, pretty much. I don't want to say the only Rebbe. He's one of the few that are in yeshiva 7 days a week, all day long. He's always there. And why is he always there? He enjoys being home. He can learn better at home. He's not bothered every 2 seconds when he's at home. He probably learned more during COVID than he has in decades. But he has a sense of achrayus to the yeshiva. When the OU asked him to be a posek, I have to ask Rabbi Lam first, because he's my boss. I can't just... of course you should be a posek for the OU. That's better for the yeshiva. It's better for... Right? But this is in achrayus to the yeshiva. Since it's achrayus to Klal Yisrael, with all those COVID tshuvas. You know, we had to force him to start writing the tshuvas because he was just answering every call from every rabbi, and it didn't matter. The 20 people will call him with the same exact shayla, the same patience, the same... Because that rabbi has a kilo also. He didn't say, call so-and-so, I just answered the shayla. You know, so we said to him, Rebbe, this is just ridiculous already. You know, like, how many times are you going to be asked to say? Because we heard in, like, recordings of question-answer sessions where different organizations were asking him the same questions. So how about, like, we make a repository of, you know, like the shaylas that come up and you'll issue them for people to... Okay, sounds like a good idea. So that's what we did. But also, you know, to talk about Rav Asher Weiss a little bit, you know, also that sense of achrayus that Rav Asher has when he knows in certain cases he has an appreciation of his role and what he can offer Klal Yisrael. And really, like, the picture of it for me was a couple of weeks ago. I may have told you this, Maisa. I brought some of the Talmidim from the Smicha program to meet with Rav Asher Weiss when he was in Brooklyn, and then we went to Rav Yisrael Reisman afterwards in Tarvadat. So when we went to Rav Asher, so he was staying at someone's house in Brooklyn. The person didn't want all these guys walking through his house, so the Talmidim waited in the shul across the street. Rav Shai Shechter and I went in to get Rav Asher, and Rav Asher said, wait, sit down for a second. I just finished writing a tshuva. I want to go over it with you, see if there are any typos, if there's anything that, you know, because before I send it out, I want to make sure it's perfect. As if, you know, we're going to... Shai actually caught a typo, but as if we're going to say, nah, the svara is all wrong. But, you know, but we sat there. I sat on his right side, Shai sat on his left side, just going through the tshuva on his iPad or whatever, his tablet, you know, going through the whole tshuva. And it was a very, very, very serious shaila of aguna, essentially. It was a very serious aguna shaila. And after we went through the tshuva, and he called up his fellow in Eretz, he called up his son-in-law, Benish, in Eretz Yisrael, and he said, send it. You know, I just sent it to you. You can send it out now. He said, I feel good about this one. He told me and Shai, he said, I feel good about this one. Okay. He said, others would not have been matia. This person needed me. Others would not have done this, and I feel like I really played a role over here, because I was able to come up with the heter that was necessary. After he came up with the heter, Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef signed on it, and Rav Shechter signed on it, so he got other Gedolei Torah to sign on it. But he knew that to produce that tshuva, he was needed, and that was a sense of achrayus for Klal Yisrael. But also there's that sense of, it's a different kind of anivus with Rav Asher. He does have that gravitas. He does have that presence about him. It's definitely a different kind of anivus. But when I then introduced him to the Talmidim and I said, Rav Asher just paskened in aguna shaila. This is what he does all day long. He's dealing with dvarim chamurim. He says, no, no, no. I also play with my grandchildren. I also, I don't all day long deal with agunas. You know, like, I do other things, live like a normal person. You know, that also just to give a sense of normalcy and that ability to connect because of that sense of normalcy.
Now this is one of the later questions, but I figured Abedubis would want to answer it, so just give him the opportunity. And whatever. What is the biggest pro and con of going into chinuch? Are the parnasa struggles overrated?
Okay, this is you saw the Mishpacha articles recently, the Mishpacha magazine. No, this is a crisis that we thought. I can tell you, we've been talking about in yeshiva about a crisis of a lack of people wanting to go into chinuch. And we thought it was in the modern Orthodox world. As it turns out, it's everywhere except for Lakewood, basically. People don't want to go into chinuch. Everywhere in America, I should say, except for Lakewood. It's not only in the modern Orthodox world. And it's a real problem. And about a generation ago, there was a significant movement, about 20 years ago, there was a significant movement to raise the salaries of mechanchim because of a similar crisis. And they did, and it worked. And what happened since then is not that the salaries have gotten worse, it's that the expectations and the standard of living within our community has continued to go up and up and up. And when people are raised with such expectations of what the bare minimum is to live, it becomes more challenging to go into chinuch. And it's a crisis. It's a real crisis. We don't even realize like how much stuff we have, like how much unnecessary. We had for a Shabbos meal a couple of months ago, Rabbi and Rebbetzin Teller, of Hanuch Teller and his wife Edel, Kishma Kein He. So they came to the house and Rebbetzin Teller was like, she was like looking around, like, my house is not, I mean, it's nice, you know, but I don't live in like a mansion. The only people that believe I live in a mansion are the Verizon people who are like, oh, the reason your internet slows because it must be that your house is very large. And I'm like, yeah, it's very, very large. Oh, now I feel good about myself. Thank you. And she says to my wife, everyone in America just has so much stuff. And she said, you know, like the things hanging on the walls and the break front, and there's just so much stuff. And, you know, that's symbolic, really, of just like the expectations that we have are like, it's too much. And I think a lot of people are costing themselves a lot of happiness by striving for all that stuff. You know, can I say 100% it works out for everybody and that everybody's going to be happy and that everyone is going to, you know, make ends meet and everyone is going to... I can't say that about everyone who goes to law school either. I know of people who went to top law schools and struggle to get by. There's no guarantees in life. The Ribbono Shel Olam is the one who provides parnasa. We have to make a reasonable hishtadlus. But the privilege of being able to be osek your entire life in transmitting the Mesorah to the next generation, in being Marbe Kavod Shemayim, is to be part of that process in such a significant way. That's Aleph. Beis, the influences you will have in your life. When you're in Chinuch, when you're in Rabbanus, the people you hang out with are fellow Mechanchim and fellow Rabbanim. You get to learn so much. Like, I get to go to YU Rosh Hashiva meetings. That's crazy. Like, I'm sitting in a meeting, I'm like, Rav Twersky and Rav Schechter and Rav Rosenzweig and Rav Shulman and they're all like around the table, and like, I get to be in the room, and like, no one thinks it's funny. It's crazy. I mean, that's the kind of things that you just get to be around. People who are growing and who are doing and who are accomplishing in a ruchnistic sense, you're not fighting your environment. You're just trying to get as much of it as you can. It's such a zechus. The relationships that you're able to develop, you know, the fact that that you have so many talmidim over the years and chaverim over the years that you could, the nachas that you get when, you know, when you have that moment where you realize that it used to take a while when I was teaching 11th grade. Now often it's already at the beginning of the year I notice it, but that talmidim have surpassed you already. Like, that's the greatest nachas in the whole world. Like, wow. I mean, there used to be a Talmud of mine. I remember when Rabbi Hecht came to visit Karen Biavne, and Silver ran over to him, Rebbe, how you doing? And Rabbi Hecht said, isn't it amazing that he calls me Rebbe, because I was his 11th grade Rebbe? Like, it's amazing. And it's just an amazing. I mean, there's just so many uplifting parts, and the inspiration you get from people who, when you get to see them at the best, and you get to see people in growth mode. It's really, I think there's a lot of happiness. There's a lot of happiness that a lot of people, and why? Because they can't see how it could work. You know, you need a plan B. What else? You know, I don't think you need a plan B. You'll figure out some other side hustle if you need to, like a lot of mechanchim do, or your opportunities will come up. Rav Shapsa says, you know, like every time that he had another kid and he needed a little more money, so they offered him to say a shir in Brooklyn and they paid him for that, and then they offered to say a shir in Queens. So another opportunity came up here and there, and he was able to make it work. And you'll see opportunities happen. You can't always predict where you're going to be. Rav Silver told me this when he was telling me I should go into chinuch, that, like, you know, there is a certain track when you go to law school, when you go to medical school. Like, you could kind of predict where you're going to be in 5-10 years from now. You cannot predict that in chinuch. Would Rabbi Rosner have told you 10 years ago, or let's say 20 years ago, even 10 years ago, that he was going to be in Karen Biavne? When we started learning Maseches Krisos Daf Beis, if you would have told him he's going to be the Rav of Nofei Alon and he's going to be in Karen Biavne, Nofei Hashem, Hashem, and Nofei Alon is Shalvim, Nofei Hashem, Hashem, he's going to be in Karen Biavne, and he's going to be like, he couldn't have predicted that. If you would have told me I'd be in YU, it would have been, I could have come up with many explanations why that's an impossibility, and like mamish an impossibility. Especially after I went to Lander, like mamish an impossibility. But then things happen, you know. And I think people, we're too caught up in like, I need to know exactly where this leads to. Do what's right. Do what you think is right for you. It's not right for everyone to go into chinuch, but it is a remarkably gratifying and you know, a field to go into, and it's a great way to spend your life in Avodas Hashem. If that's your calling, if that's what you should be doing, you shouldn't feel that you have to do something that's not your calling because it's a job and it's good. If you have an opportunity to do your calling,
not much to add. Just I think Maran Chagiga says that in the first parak that there's Rebbe cries 3 tears every day. Two of them are for the people who are in Chinuch and Torah and shouldn't be, and the people who are not in chinuch and Torah and should be. So we have to figure out where we can best serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but why shouldn't our best minds go into Torah and chinuch and teaching? You know, why should, you know, that's, we have to seriously think about it. To primarily give back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, give back to Am Yisrael. And there are riches other than money that we'll get some later. I believe we spoke about this. For a family to have a mechanech, to have a rabbi as a role model. Again, it does not mean, and often there are studies done about children of rabbis, there's how many want them to be rabbis and don't want to be rabbis, but there are certain environments that are created that are intangibles, that is something other than riches. Again, Baruch Hashem, you know, in our day and age, I remember, I think even when I was growing up, which was not so long ago, but there was, you know, the teachers and mechanchim, you know, were not even in the same ballpark as others. So now, and the ballparks are higher, but there is a decent, respectable salaries that in many places one can get, and one might need something on the side. But in many places, you know, everybody is, no matter what field one is in, is challenging, and the. The vacation perks in Chinuch and are great. That one Shabbos and Yantif and summers, whatever they might be. But there are riches other than money. that one gets in, to be involved in Torah and chinuch and teaching. And it says 8 times in the Torah in different ways, ve'alachta b'drachav. It's one of the last mitzvahs in the Torah. Being like a HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And one of the greatest ways that we could be like a HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to share Torah, and teach Torah, and ha'malami Torah l'mo Yisrael. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. That's what Soloveitchik used to say. I'm just a Malami. He's not just a Malami. That's the highest level. The highest of what it could be. The greatest shevach to give to a person is that he's doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does. He's a Malami, and he teaches Torah. And if I did not think about, I thought I was going into business. My Shana, my college in Shana Aleph. And then after Shana Aleph, I knew I wanted to live in Israel, but I didn't think about chinuch. Rabbanus, forget it, for sure not. But during Shana Bet, when I thought that this, it just became so clear that I can't see myself doing anything else, not only because I want to do this. And it's the chinuch is not just about, I love learning, so I'm going to go into chinuch. You have to love teaching and sharing. Someone who loves learning and not sharing, then that's not going to work. You know, it has to be, you know, the sharing element. And one doesn't have to be have the greatest mind to do that. Rav Gifter says, and we'll close with this, it's getting late. Rav Gifter says that the Gemara in Sukkah that talks about the Talmidim of Hillel, the 20 greatest, that stopped the son like Moshe Rabbeinu, and the next 20. And then there's the Beinonim. Gol Shemayn Yonatan Ben Uziel. Kavta Shabahem Yochanan Ben Zakkai. And where it lists off all the things that Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai could do. And he understood the Malachim and the trees and the everything. So that's for Gifter. Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai was Kavta Shabakulan. But he was the Gadol Ador. He was the man that made all the Takanas. So why was he the Kavta Shabakulan? He wasn't the greatest mind. Everybody else had a greater mind than him. So Rabbi Gifter says he was the greatest transmitter. He was the greatest, not that you don't have to have the greatest mind. He had the greatest Islamus. The one who put it together, the one who organized it, the one who wanted to give it over the most and gave it over the most in the best way. In the most, Rav Shachter likes to say this, hiddur mitzvah, even by teaching Torah. To package it nicely, to make a nice sheet, you know, when people see it. You know, this hiddur mitzvah. It should be beautiful also. Again, that's but like Rabbi Leibowitz said, there's nothing greater when you look back at your day and think about how hopefully you tried to inspire. There are headaches and there are difficulties and there are challenges, and we live in generally in a time period where there's most families are two parnasa families, a husband and a wife, except when after a child. So again, that's the siyata d'shmaya, every step of the way. No matter what field one is in, but if one thinks that they have the koach and can, it's definitely something that one should seriously think about in terms of dedicating one's life to teaching Torah and being like a Kodesh Baruch.
We know it's late, but can we have one more quick question?
One sentence answer.
Well, the question could be quick.
Besides for Gemara and Chazara, what other limud would you suggest for someone going to their Shana Aleph or Shana Bet?
Besides for what?
Gemara and Chazara.
Aside from Gemara and Chazara, is there any other limud in Shana
Aleph and Shana Bet? Makam Shalibo Chafetz. You know, there are certain basics. And obviously, you know, in the yeshiva schedule, whatever yeshiva ones, I think there's a basic skeleton of a schedule. Gemara Be'iyim, Gemara Be'kios, Halacha. You know, one needs to have Halacha Seder, whether it's Mishnah Berurah, whatever one feels, one needs to have a Musar Seder. And one needs to do Chumash and Rashi. So beyond that, and one has to make sure one has that. So again, it depends on the person, what one is drawn to. I think the question said, you know, should one dedicate time to Mar Nevuchim? If Mar Nevuchim pulls you, then learn Mar Nevuchim. If Mar Nevuchim doesn't pull you, that doesn't have to be right. Some might say it has to be, depending maybe certain yeshivas. You have to know exactly. But again, I think there is a certain area of Jewish philosophy that, you know, what pulls you? You know, if one wants to learn A, B, or C, which one is better, which one is worse, which one, you know, this should be. I was just talking to somebody today. I said, or just right outside, right in front here, I said, how about a Mishnayis? Mishnayis, really? Yeah. Mishnayis. But it's like, but is that really, is that just to get Yedias? Like, what does that mean? Just to get Yedias. So Mishnayis is crucial. Mishnayis, Shas is so much easier if you know Mishnayis.
and you have to try to figure out some time to do Tanakh at some point. Again, you have a certain limited amount of time. So you have to know, okay, we can talk privately about which order, and if you have a certain amount of time, half an hour, so you have to work it out. But again, Mar B'Kiyas, Halacha Seder, Musar Seder, and outside of that, I think, one has to know themselves what would draw them, what would keep them at the Seder. But I don't think there's one specific Sefer or one specific type of Limud, you know, that one should. When somebody wants to study Rav Soloveitchik, or somebody wants to study Chassidus, and somebody wants to study this, there's no right answer and wrong answer. Whatever pulls the person to that Limud.
I just had two things. One that Rabbi Razmer actually mentioned, but the Shulchan Aruch says you have to do Shnei Mekrev Echatargum. So, like, I mean, the baseline is you have to be a Shulchan Aruch Jew, right? So you got to do Shnei Mekrev Echatargum. So that's not one of the Libo Chafetz ones. That's like whether you like it or not, you know, that's what you got to do. Here are my two things. First, I think it's Kedai for even guys who are at your age, and I know Rabbi Reisman said not this way, but even guys who are at your age, to start to begin to understand how Gemara and Halacha connect with each other. Take a sugya once a week, something like that, and just see how it works out in the Beis Yosef and see how it plays out in Shulchan Aruch, just to develop an appreciation how many guys, that by the time they start Smichan, they're expected to learn Yeridaya, have never seen the Beis Yosef. They don't even know what the book is about. They don't even know how it's supposed to work, and just to get a functional, you know, understanding, just like how it works. A lot of times people don't like halacha because they think halacha is just a list of rules. It's Kiddush Shulchan Aruch. I wouldn't like halacha either if it was just a list of rules. It's the totality of Torah Shebal Peh, meaning it's all. And Torah Shmitzav, it all, you know, goes in a certain direction, and you should appreciate how that direction works. And the other thing I think is very important for guys, particularly when you're in yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, and when you're in any yeshiva, really, whatever yeshiva you're in, there are personalities that are around that offer things that are unique. A perspective that's unique, a skill that's unique, something that's unique that they're willing to give over. And sometimes you have like these chugim or these shiurim where there are like four guys there. And like, you know, I got so much when I was in Keren B'Yavne, so much from like going to Dayan Be'eri, Dayan Be'eri used to give, he was a Panovitcher Talmud, and he would give like these Musar Shmuz to Rav Kalman Bear's, like, I don't know, fireworks. I just remember like on the Parsha. It was, to like just seeing the different things that were available to us, it was just that really how sort of Silver Zilcha Shabbos and, you know, Rav Bachman Zev Shechaim, like, you can't go to all of them, but you should try to open yourself up to those unique kinds of opportunities, because they are opportunities, and they're going to be memorable for you, and they'll help shape you. Don't be too cool to go to anything. Because you have to be in Gemara 14 hours a day, open yourself up. Again, you can't do all of them, it's not possible, but you know, depending on the yeshiva, maybe if the yeshiva doesn't offer too much, it is possible, but it's kedai to take advantage of the Torah personalities. You're one Rebbe that you have, you're going to be obsessed with, and you're going to love him, and he's going to be the Gadol Adar, and there's no one that knows as much as him, and he's the biggest Anav, and it's so awesome that guys your age like think that way about all of your Rebbeim, and you know, but it's great, but there are other rabbis also that also have what to offer, and you should try to gain an appreciation for that as well.
Okay, thank you, Rabbi Razner, I believe it's for insights and Torah insights you shared throughout the entire summer.
Nice. Yeah, thank you. All right.